Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This week, the nation marked the 50th anniversary of the historic March on Washington. And we've talked a lot about Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and about the organization and effort that went into the largest civil rights rally in American history. But there's an interesting story to be told about what happened in the immediate aftermath of the march. It's the story of how the tension between politics and justice was played out in the most powerful person in the country. It's the story of President John F. Kennedy and his complicated legacy on civil rights. On August 28, 1963, Kennedy was at the White House. Like many other Americans, he watched the march on television. When it finished, he made a phone call.
He invited the civil rights leaders to come to the White House after the march and congratulated them on their success in carrying this off.
Robert Dalek is professor emeritus at Boston University and one of the nation's preeminent presidential historians. He's author of many books on Kennedy, including An Unfinished Life, John F. Kennedy, 1917 to 1963. Earlier that summer, Dalek says Kennedy had urged civil rights leaders not to march. He'd worried that the presence of hundreds of thousands of protesters on the National Mall could jeopardize Kennedy's early efforts to pass the Civil Rights Act.
But once they went ahead and he watched it on television and saw how effective it was and how effective Martin Luther King's speech was and that the whole thing was carried off with no violence at all, it changed the way in which he responded to it. And it gave him some increased hope that the bill might pass.
The evening of the march, civil rights leaders responded to Kennedy's request and did meet with him in the Oval Office. There are tapes of that meeting, and in them you can hear Roy Wilkins, executive secretary of the NAACP, telling Kennedy that the people had spoken, and it was time for the government to act.
People back home, from small towns to big cities, the working people, men who gave up 2 days' pay, 3 days' pay, it means that they, and not Martin Luther King or Roy Wilkins or Whitney Young or Walter Luther, have dreamed up this civil rights business. They feel it in their heart that not to come here and show by their presence to you and to the Congress what they hope their government will do.
Now, this is where we get a glimpse of Kennedy's complicated, even ambiguous view of the civil rights movement. Kennedy makes it clear that he believes it's not just the government's responsibility to change American attitudes about race. Robert Dalek, in part of the tape, we hear President Kennedy himself. And there's a point in which they're discussing the question of education. And the president says, isn't it possible for the Negro community to take the lead in committing major emphasis upon the responsibility of Black families, essentially, when it comes to education? And what I hear there is a glimpse into how the president, in part, wanted middle-class African-Americans to shoulder some of the responsibility to prove to the rest of the nation, to prove to white Americans that they weren't the enemy, necessarily.
Yeah. It's a very good point. The concern with education was reflected in the fact that, of course, Kennedy also had a bill before the Congress for federal aid to education. And he and Lyndon Johnson, of course, as his vice president, and then particularly coming after him, believed very much in the idea that if you could give blacks equal opportunity in the schools, if they could then seize upon those opportunities, they could participate in the economy in a much more competitive way. It was the oldest idea in America that the way to achieve, the way to rise up, the way to gain access to the middle class was through being serious about your education. And in essence, that's what Kennedy was reflecting, saying to blacks, do you want to come into the middle class? Then the way to do it is to educate your children.
Kind of go back in time a little bit, because on June 22nd, roughly 2 months before, he met with civil rights leaders in the White House, you know, and when they just after they had declared that they were going to march on the Capitol, and the president tells, you know, Martin Luther King and A. Philip Randolph that what they should be focusing on is, quote, success in Congress and not a big show on the Capitol. You know, looking back now, 50 years later, we know that the march was a peaceful event. But Kennedy at that time, in 63, had every reason to be worried, didn't he? I mean, the South was essentially exploding.
Yes, he did, because there had been so much violence across the South. In Alabama, the marches that were taking place in Birmingham, and the chief of police bringing out these snarling police dogs and those fire hoses that could rip the bark off a tree and turning them on these young people who were marching peacefully, that he had every reason to believe that this march could not be an entirely peaceful affair, but that it would explode in the kind of violence that had occurred recently in Birmingham, Alabama, which had moved him to put the civil rights bill before the Congress.
It's remarkable to think about how that summer was. The march happens on August 28th. You know, just 2 months before that, there's that meeting at the White House on June 22nd. And just 11 days before that, on June 11th, 1963, President Kennedy gives, that incredible and now famous address where he first says that civil rights is a moral issue.
It is as old as the scriptures and is as clear as the American Constitution. The heart of the question is whether all Americans are to be afforded equal rights and equal opportunities, whether we are going to treat our fellow Americans as we want to be treated.
And before that, privately, he said, you know, the Southerners tell us, stay out of it. We'll take care of it. In essence, states' rights. He said, they keep saying that, but they never do anything. And they never will do anything unless we act now and we assert the authority of the federal government, was essentially what he was saying.
But on the other hand, he also mentions the fact that we were sending soldiers at that time into foreign wars.
We preach freedom around the world, and we mean it. And we cherish our freedom here at home. But are we to say to the world, and much more importantly, to each other, that this is a land of the free, except for the Negroes, that we have no second-class citizens, except Negroes, that we have no class or caste system, no ghettos, no master race, except with respect to Negroes.
So he gives a glimpse that, you know, his focus really was on foreign policy. Civil rights was a secondary issue that his hand was forced on to talk about at that time. And then at the same time, while he's giving this amazing speech saying we cannot fulfill the dream of America unless we bring about equality for all its citizens, he's also behind the scenes telling civil rights leaders to slow down. So was the president sort of talking out of both sides of his mouth?
Indeed, he would say, politics can unseat you, but foreign policy can kill you. And his highest priority was to avoid some kind of conflict with Russia, which would turn into a nuclear holocaust. So Kennedy is brought essentially kicking and screaming into the civil rights issue. But it's tied to foreign policy. Because, you see, Kennedy's concern was not just with the question of equal possibility, equal opportunity, and of justice, and of civil peace. But he was also concerned by the consideration that the Chinese and Soviet communists were beating unmercifully on the United States for being a racist society. And Kennedy was intensely concerned about the hearts and minds, as it was put, in the developing countries, in the Third World. And he felt that a step forward on civil rights, a step forward in accepting the grievances of African Americans, was going to do a great deal to sell America's side of the Cold War to peoples in the Third World. And he says, let's face up to it. You know, our record here is not one that we can be proud of.
We cannot say to 10% of the population that you can't have that right, that your children can't have the chance to develop whatever talents they have, that the only way that they are going to get their rights is to go in the street and demonstrate. I think we owe them and we owe ourselves a better country than that.
Professor Dalek, let me ask you about just the domestic politics that President Kennedy was also dealing with at the time. The 1960 election that he won was so very, very close. He needed every black vote that he could get, but he also needed those Southern Democrats who were the segregationists as well. I mean, was that part of what he was, you know, weighing and balancing in the summer of 63?
Without question. And that's why that speech in behalf of civil rights on June 11, 63 can be seen as a courageous act on his part. They worried that they might be jeopardizing his reelection in the following year. And that's in significant part why he went to Texas in November of 63. It was a fence-mending trip because there was a serious divide in the Texas Democratic Party between liberals and conservatives. And Kennedy wanted to bring them together.
Well, and of course, it's on November 22nd, 1963, in Dallas, where Kennedy is assassinated. You know, given that he never did have a chance to run for that second term, and it is Lyndon Johnson who ends up pushing through the Civil Rights Act of 1964, in the end, what would you say is President Kennedy's legacy on civil rights issues? Did he drag his feet for too long?
Well, I would say his legacy is somewhat mixed, but at the end of the day, he was courageous in finally putting that bill before the Congress. So there really is on civil rights, it probably is best described as a Kennedy-Johnson act of law, and I think they share a certain credit for it.
Well, Robert Dalek is one of the nation's preeminent historians. He's author of a number of books, including An Unfinished Life, John F. Kennedy, 1917 to 1963. His latest book is Camelot's Court, Inside the Kennedy White House. It is set to be published in October. Professor Dalek, thank you so very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. It's always great to talk to you.
And special thanks to the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum for the audio you heard of those 1963 Oval Office meetings. The Kennedy Library has an excellent new site featuring highlights from the civil rights movement. There's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Stick with us because in a moment, the electric powwow with a tribe called Red. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.